Welcome to the OA Serenity Sunday Meeting Podcast. Serenity Sunday is now hybrid, meeting in person at Roxbury Park in Beverly Hills and on Zoom. Visit the Los Angeles Intergroup's webpage at oalaig.org for information on how to join our meeting live in either iteration. Now that we're meeting in person, Serenity Sunday has regular meeting expenses and would appreciate Seventh Tradition donations to help support the meeting and this podcast. You can donate via Venmo at Serenity Sunday 2023 or through PayPal, SerenitySunday1212 at gmail.com. The opinions expressed on the Serenity Sunday podcast are those of the individual speaker and not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. And now, our speaker.
My name's Angela and I'm a compulsive eater. Hi, everyone. I'm so grateful to be here. Thank you, Diane, for asking me to speak at Serenity Sunday. I really love being around people who understand me. I don't know if there's anybody in the room or online who feels like maybe nobody understands you, but I will say that if you have restricted food or thought that not eating for a whole month was a good idea, or eating your food and then trying to get rid of it with laxatives or bulimia, throwing up, if you thought that was a good idea, if you woke up at 2 in the morning and just put the trench coat over the pajamas and went to get something to eat. If you went through like 3 or 4 drive-throughs in one night, if you can constantly obsessed about your weight, if you felt like you could surgically remove different parts of your body or maybe all of your body, if you felt like you'd rather go to prison than be where you are now, eating compulsively. What else? If you obsessed about diets, trying to find the right one, and then keep, you know, going from diet to diet, sometimes 3 or 4 diets before 12 noon. If you've done any of those things, welcome and thank you for being here because I understand. I understand. I've been through it all. So my abstinence date is July 17th, 1993. So this July, I will be celebrating 30 years of abstinence. And for any of you who remember, I remember Doris from the log cabin. So like I said, it's just really an honor to be here. You're my people. I understand the food obsession. And I don't think people out there who don't have the food obsession, they don't understand it the way you do. So thank you. I'm going to start with, you know, when we were reading the format, it's like, oh, what an order. I can't go through with it. And, you know, there is an order here and it is difficult. But maybe we picked it. I don't know, because I will say today that I'm really grateful for my journey. And I'm really grateful that I am today a compulsive eater and that I found a program of recovery. I wasn't grateful before I found the solution. And also I used a lot of time. So I struggled in 8 years before my abstinence. I struggled for 8 years, beating myself up with those steps, with the big book, trying to get it. It felt like everyone else could get it and I couldn't. You know, I just felt like I was such a loser. I was one of those constitutionally incapable people, you know, that just couldn't get it. And that was suffering. That was really a hard, hard place to be because I was here around the solution, but I couldn't get it. And it was really painful, much more painful than just being out there and not knowing any better. So I'm just going to tell you a little bit about my how it started for me, and it's going to go way back, prenatal. So what happened? Somebody did this for me in a meeting. It was really helpful. So what happened for my mom is she was the last one of three siblings in the house. And my grandmother, who was now a widow, kind of panicked and thought that my mom needed somebody to care for her. And at the same time, another family was being very aggressive in saying that my mom should marry their son. My mom wasn't in love with their son, didn't even know him. She was in love with somebody else. But one thing led to another, and she ended up getting kind of forced to marry this guy. He turned out to be abusive, and he was insanely jealous. My mom was extremely beautiful. Think Sophia Loren, young Sophia Loren, extremely beautiful. And they were living, I'm Turkish, so this was in Turkey. She got married. He took her to Switzerland, where he was supposedly studying to be a commercial artist. And when he left the apartment every day, he would lock the door behind him so that she was locked inside. So here she is, 19 years old, married to a guy she doesn't love, barely knows, in a foreign country, can't speak the language. He locks her in the apartment every day while he goes out and does whatever he does. And she's on the pill and gets pregnant with me. Okay, so that was my start. And I don't know what went on. She doesn't talk about it much. What I told you is the only information I have, but I can imagine she wasn't very happy. And so I came out and I wasn't very happy. I just wasn't very happy. And I cannot remember a time in my life when I felt like I belong. Like I love in your format, it says, welcome home. Welcome home. You belong. Because for me, I never belonged. I felt like I didn't even belong on this planet. You know, it's like I felt like I was a mistake. So early on in my life, my mom left my father, and as I was still a baby, and then at age six, she remarried, and we moved around a lot. So I was always the new kid in school. So not only do I not belong, now I really don't belong because I just don't belong because I'm in a new school and there's new kids and there's new fashions and there's new things that you say that are cool and other things that aren't cool and. And I could just never be cool. I tried to be cool, but I wasn't. And at an early age, I learned to not eat. I thought at age seven, I have two children now. They're 20 and 21. But I used to look at them at age seven and think, oh my gosh, like that was the age that I had my first diet, you know? And because I thought my thighs were too big. And so I was 7 years old dieting. Now, you know, the diet consisted of stuff that we don't eat, you know, in a box, but that was my diet. You know, it was still a diet, and the objective was to get thin thighs. So I was not eating, and that got me a lot of attention, and my parents were worried, and blah blah blah. And I felt very, very powerful restricting my food. It was very a good place for me, I thought. But then one thing led to another. I started at age 11. I started ballet. I started dancing. And of course, in that realm, not eating is a good thing. And then the day I quit ballet, that appetite, that suppressed appetite just came out. And I ate, I had to eat everything in sight. And the voracious appetite was uncontrollable. Uncontrollable. And it was like I was like a bat out of hell and I had to eat. And so again, being terrified of gaining weight, I started throwing up. And so I did that. I did throwing up. I did try to do diets. I tried to do exercise. But the main thing was I ended up just throwing up. At times, my electrolytes were so low, I would just pass out. So I tried college, three different colleges, and I couldn't stick with it. And I ended up just working as at a compulsive overeater's dream job. I became a waitress. So I was a waitress for a long, long time. I went to a treatment center. So I was living in Canada at the time. they had headhunters there because our insurance was really good. So I ended up in a treatment center in Chicago. That didn't work out. Went back to Toronto, stayed there for a whole year, binging and being miserable and just horrible, could not stop. And then I went to another treatment center in Texas. Somebody told me, oh, this treatment center will work. I was always looking for the solution, you know, the right solution, the thing that would fix me. Something out there is going to fix me. So I went to Houston, and at the end of that, you know, they said, okay, you're dismissed. And I knew I was going to go out and binge again. I just knew it, you know, sort of in the treatment center. There was like a sort of a safe environment, and, you know, they made my bed for me. We had art therapy. We had, you know, drama therapy. We had music therapy. I mean, it was like a spa. And so I was sort of calm at that time, I guess. And, you know, the food didn't seem to be as much of a problem, but I knew the minute that I left, you know, life was going to be right there. And I knew I was going to binge again. But I thought, you know, through my life, I thought I had a big fantasy life. It was sometimes better, most of the time better than real life. And I thought that if I moved to LA and became famous, then the whole thing would go away. And, you know, I would have no more problems with food. So I thought, well, here I am in Houston, I'm really close. So I took a train, came to LA, didn't know anybody, didn't have any money, didn't have a green card. And I was here for a long time without any of those things. One thing led to another. A guy in an acting class, I had at one point, I was house sitting, and then that ended. And then this guy in an acting class gave me this 1966 Volkswagen pop top camper. And he said, you can have it because I have nowhere to park it, and it's going to break down in a few months anyway. So he gave me that van, and that became my home. So guys, I'm telling you this story because, you know, we hear these stories in Alcoholics Anonymous and in Narcotics Anonymous. Well, I was living in my car, I was homeless, whatever. Food, it was food that brought me to this place in my life. It was the food. I could not stop eating. I was not employable. Nothing was going on up here except get me more food. And that's what landed me living in a van. And when I was living in the van, I thought it'd be a cool idea to make money on the streets, busking, singing songs. So I would sing, dress up in funny clothes and sing songs in front of the Chinese theater with a shoebox in front of me, hoping that I would get discovered and hoping I would get famous. Well, the only problem was I really didn't know any of the words to any of the songs I was singing. So. But I did make enough money to go to the salad bars. And at that time, Wendy's had an unlimited salad bar, and they don't do that anymore. And I think it's because of me, because I used to take the tray and forget the plate. The tray was full, you know, it's full of food. So the day my van broke down, we knew it was going to break down. I checked my voicemail. Remember those? Voicemail, $9.99 a month. I still remember my number. 213-739-4050. Any agents out there, if you want to call me, that's my number. No agents called me, but I checked my voicemail, and there was a bed open at the West Hollywood Homeless Organization. That was at the corner of Santa Monica and La Brea. Now it's a big fancy mall with a Target, but in those days it was an upholstery shop on the bottom and a homeless organization at the top. And it was a big room with army cots and a little locker where we kept our stuff. I didn't have much stuff. I had a big book that was all stained with food stains and coffee stains and drink stains. And because I was reading it, I was trying to get it, but I wasn't getting it. Now, the only problem with this homeless organization, I guess I had a bed to sleep in and a roof over my bed, but they had a walk-in refrigerator. And all the fancy bakeries on La Brea, all the good ones, would donate, of course, to the homeless those poor homeless people up the street, right? So this place was full, garbage bags full of food, free food. And I could close the door and be by myself. And so here I am, and I've done it I've gone and binged in this refrigerator many, many times, and I'm just like, I know I'm going to go do it again. I know it's going to be one more day, no matter how many times I tell myself I'm not going to do it today. I always did it. So I was just like, I don't know what I'm going to do. So I went into this little room in the homeless organization that was dedicated as the library, also with donated books. And I just said a prayer. I said, God help. You know, when you're hurting, you don't need to pray very long. And my hand went down and it picked up this little book. And it happened to be a little New Testament. Now, I'm not getting religious on you. Trust me, I did not grow up religious. I didn't know you could read these things. I thought they were written in Latin. I didn't know you could read them. But I picked it up. I furled the pages. It stopped on a chapter called Matthew. My eyes landed at Matthew 10:29. And it said, "Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them falls to the ground apart from the will of the Father. Even the hairs on your head are numbered. So do not fear. You are more valuable than many sparrows." And at that moment, I had what's described in the big book as a spiritual experience. And a magnetic energy came into the room, and I felt my heart move from one place to another. And I felt a surrounding of love wrapping around my body. And I heard the words, "You are worthy." See, I had felt unworthy my whole life. I felt like I didn't belong and I was not even worthy of living.
And
And
that
I
was
heard
5 minutes,
the
Angela.
"Thank you. You are worthy." And then he said, "And you never have to do that again." And I knew exactly what he meant. And I walked out of that library and I never threw up again. So that was the beginning of my abstinence. Just don't throw up. That was it. And I didn't. It was taken away from me. It was removed. And I thank God for that. So then I came to AA to supplement my food program. And I learned in the doctor's opinion about the allergy. So I have a physical allergy to certain foods. So my abstinence is I abstain from those foods. So I can tell you guys that I have not had a craving in 30 plus years. Now, have I been hungry? Sure. You know, between, let's see, in another hour, it's going to be lunchtime. Can't wait, you know? But the craving, no, I haven't had that drive to go out and get food. Or go out and eat something that I know I'm not supposed to have. So that's freedom. Because before I was in jail, I was in this jail of, you know, I have to eat or I have to pass out or something. That was it. That was my whole life. Today I don't have that. I have freedom. I went on a cruise a month ago and I just took clothes from my closet, put them in the suitcase because they all fit. I don't have to try them on. I've been the same in the same body for 30 plus years. That's freedom. That's freedom. I can go to places where they serve food and I can be with the people. My sponsor says, eat the people. And I can be with the people and enjoy the people and not be thinking about the food the whole time. That is freedom. So at this point of the story, I like to tell you, oh, well, you know, I got abstinent and I got famous and everything's fine. I didn't get famous, but I did get a life beyond my wildest dreams. I don't live in a van anymore. I live in a house, and I did get married to a wonderful man. We did end up getting divorced, but we had a wonderful time when we were together. I have two children. They're still living at home. I have two little doggies, and I have the best thing. The best thing is I have a fridge full of food. Before coming to program, I couldn't have anything in my fridge because I would eat it. Like by nighttime, it would be, I would go grocery shopping. Okay, I'm gonna buy healthy stuff. And by the end of the day, all the healthy stuff was, it didn't matter. I would binge on it. It didn't matter if it was healthy stuff or not healthy stuff. I had no discrimination. If it was food, I'll eat it. The seafood diet, I think they call it. Anything I see, I eat. Today I have a fridge full of food. I have a pantry full of food, and it doesn't call to me. I have my lunch, I have my dinner, I have my breakfast, and I'm free. So I just want to say, I like to share this experience that I had with this huge amount, this big power, because God is always there and he cares about us. And even the hairs on our head are numbered. So this year I went through cancer treatment. And a year ago today, I found out that I had breast cancer. And don't worry, I'll be okay. But I went through all of that abstinent. And I'm telling you guys, going through cancer and cancer treatment and blah, 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 all that stuff, nothing compared to getting abstinent. Like getting abstinent is the hardest thing we will ever, ever do. So I'm fine today. My hair is growing back. And the hairs on my head are numbered and yours too. And God knows everything about you and he knows all your thoughts. And here's the thing, it says in step three to find a God as we understand him. Well, I don't understand God, but there's a lot of things I don't understand. I don't understand gravity either. I can't see it, I can't touch it, I can't feel it. But if I walk off the top of the building, I'll know it's there. Is that my time?
Thank you, Angela.
Okay, do I just end?
Yep.
Yeah, can I wrap up? Of
Course.
So if I walk off the top of the building, I know gravity's there. Same thing with God. I can't touch him, I can't see him, I can't feel him, but he's there. And even if I don't believe in him, he doesn't care. He loves me anyway. So I'll just end by saying, I know today, after a long time in program, that I don't necessarily need to understand God, but I just need to have a God who understands me. Thank you for letting me be here today.